Welcome to the very first episode of the CSM podcast. I'm Jason Champion, and I'm thrilled to have you along for this new venture. This podcast will run in seasons, roughly 10 episodes per season, with occasional bonus episodes throughout and a break in between the seasons. In today's episode, I want to just set out what I'm planning to do from this podcast. I want to tell you a bit about who I am, why I've started this podcast, and what you can expect moving forward. So, who am I? Well, since 2017, I've been running a YouTube channel all about scale modelling. Over time, my interests have covered a wide range of subjects. I started with a deep dive into the Spanish Civil War, which is a fascinating period, but albeit fairly niche. So, although I spent a few years researching, I had my own IPMS special interest group for it and went round to different shows actually exhibiting with mainly kits that I had built rather than with other people helping, because it was a bit of a solo project. When I transitioned over to making a YouTube channel, if I just made it solely about the Spanish Civil War, that would be a little bit limiting. So I decided that I did actually need to branch out, especially if that's what I wanted to do with the channel, which I did. I wanted to try and get out there a little bit more, not mainly become a massive success, more have broad appeal. So luckily, my other interest has always been a deep love for World War II, Second World War, but yeah, we'll call it World War II. And that's especially in the history, and I always used to focus on German armour. Now, since I've got a little bit older and read a little bit more, watched a few more documentaries and listened to audiobooks and podcasts and all of that, that interest has expanded greatly away from German armour. So as much as I've got a good knowledge of German armour, I've got a massive interest across all aspects of the Second World War, be it British armour, aircraft, same with USSR, USA aircraft, all of it. The war in the Pacific, the Western Front, the Mediterranean Front as well. But my main focus and interest is on the Eastern Front, especially as it's just such an unbelievable conflict. I mean, it's actually, I find it difficult to comprehend the size and scale of the war in the East during the Second World War, particularly between Germany and Soviet Russia from 1941 through to the end of fall of Berlin, basically. So that's a particular interest in mine. I'm hoping with this podcast to kind of expand out a little bit more from the modelling. It's going to be a modelling-based podcast initially, but I'd like to expand out into the history as well, which I can't do so much on the YouTube channel. So that's who I am and that's my interest. And now let's delve a little bit deeper into why I actually want to make a podcast. So as I was alluded to, I mean, this podcast is about merging two passions of mine, which is modelling and history. Now, I'm in no way a professional historian or have any authority in it. I've got no qualifications, nothing. I'm a pretty mediocre amateur historian. But for years, I have been sort of looking at the background behind the models we build and trying to take a little bit more of an interest in the history behind things. So not just think I'm going to build a T-34 in 1942. I tend to try and make a little bit more of it to think, right, what was the placement of that tank in that period? Where was it used? What battles was it involved in? Did it go on a bit further? What were the history of those battles? What was happening at the time? And that sort of thing. That's what's happening in my mind. It's difficult to put that into the videos, but I tend to try and think about that on every build I do. I also like to try and get actual reference photos. So I do at least, for every scheme I'm doing, I like to try and find at least one actual photo of that particular tank, aircraft, whatever it would be, in the setting for the period that it's in. So with my few reference books and audiobooks, like I've said, I've been able to sort of take a deeper dive into the background behind the models we build. And I do believe there's a bit of a value there in sharing that knowledge. It's knowledge that we've all got, but it might be something interesting to listen along to. And especially when it connects the hobby we've all got a love for. So this podcast is primarily aimed at fellow modelers, but instead of just focusing on tools or techniques, I want to actually explore the why certain subjects captivate us, the stories behind specific vehicles and what makes some kits classics. So why we always go back to them, you know, spring into mind the BF-109, Mustangs, Shermans, Tiger Tanks, Spitfires. We'll talk about all of them as we go on through, but we'll also, you know, look at some of the lesser known stuff. There's a lot of certainly tanks and aircraft that I'm interested in that you know, really don't hit the top tens of anything from the Second World War. So we can delve into them as well. And it might be talking about the kits, it might be talking about the vehicle, it might be merging both together. We'll see how we go on. So season one will be roughly, I'm looking at about 80% modelling and 20% history. And that might shift and evolve as the show goes on. We'll see what feedback we get. And with this podcast, it's actually going to be a solo podcast. It's important to say that I'd love to have other people on, I'd love to have guests or do it with other people, but I know what life gets like. It can be very complicated to tie multiple people down to do something. So as with most of what I do, which is the subjects, the YouTube, everything, I'm going to do a solo podcast. So that means that I can actually focus down and commit to what I want to do without having to rely on other people necessarily. But hopefully as we go through, we'll get a few other people on and get some interesting talks and discussions going forward. Now, in this podcast, this particular episode, which is episode one, is probably worth just spending a little bit more time talking about myself, which I'm very comfortable to do, which people who know me will not be surprised at. So a little bit more of my journey and how it's got me to this place. So like a lot of people, I did start young. It looks like the best will in the world, we've been managed to track down the model that I think I first built with my dad was a Matchbox Spitfire. A later model, maybe a Mark 22, something like that. It had clip wings, and I remember building that alongside my dad. We were sat on my bed, painted, built it up, painting it, holding it up to the ceiling, no doubt making plane noises. And then that was hung in pride position, hanging from my ceiling. And I was pretty much hooked from then. I did start with aircraft. That was what I mainly built for a long time until I sort of stumbled across the Airfix tank. So this would be in 1/72nd scale. This would be the sort of focus. And then my dad warned me that the tracks actually might be a bit difficult, so be a bit careful with building a tank. And of course, I took that as a challenge that he said I shouldn't do it, so I should do it, and quickly found that it wasn't too much of a problem. Melted the tracks together with a flathead screwdriver, absolutely fine, and I was into tanks from then on, really. And soon it was upgrading the scale from 1/72nd to 1/35th, and I do remember my dad always talking about this Tamiya Tiger. It was like a classic thing, so I did want to hunt that down. I think I eventually did, but it took a while. Often we'd go into model shops when we were on outings. And the one I remember getting specifically to this day was the Tamiya Panzer IV-D, which is a classic. It's still out there now, 70s tooling, and a nice model to start with. And it was nice that the wheels and the tracks went round. I remember doing that. By 13, we'd actually made a little bit of a, started a little local model club with my dad and a family friend, Robert. And we built together, went to shows, and I even managed to win a few junior competition awards. Then, like a lot of people, the late teens came on and I drifted away. As the old classic, drinking girls and all that sort of thing takes over and things become a little bit more important in your life. But I did sort of come back now and again, kept revisiting the hobby here and there. If I was sort of unwell, I'd think I'd maybe just put a kit together as I'm sat at home and that sort of thing. So it was always going, kept a small stash up in the attic, but didn't really come back properly until I met my now fiance, who was a crafter herself. And we used to go around to all these hobby craft shops all over the place. And it wasn't long before I'd seen so many kits that I thought, actually, let's sort of make a start back on this. And she encouraged it, so off we went. And that was 2015. I really did sort of go all in then. I got the airbrush out, back out, and got back into it and tried to take it seriously. Realised, certainly from the armour side, modelling had changed quite considerably from when I stopped in sort of 2006, I guess, properly following it. So that was interesting. Joined a local club, and it was up then until about 2017 when I decided, after finding there was a modelling community on YouTube, I decided to start my own channel, and then the rest is on the channel to be seen how I went from there to here. So the next step for me now is this podcast, which is really an extension of what I do on the YouTube channel, where we do some rambling talks and we have some videos like that, but I can't really get right into it. This is a chance to do a bit of a longer format and longer form content, and I am hoping to put these podcasts up onto the YouTube channel as well. I'll try and film them, but one thing at a time. Let's see how we go. So in this next part of the podcast, I want to talk about World War II and why we're going to focus on that. So my focus is actually, from the historical side, is going to be more or less around the Second World War. That doesn't mean it's going to be exclusively that. We will bring in aspects of the First World War, the Spanish Civil War, maybe even post-war and the Cold War. But predominantly, the historical side, because it aligns with my kit choices, my periods that I like to model in, is going to be focusing on the Second World War. I will refer to it as World War II, but I'd like to use a well-known phrase that it's not a sequel. It's a standalone thing, Second World War. But we'll go for WW2, and we'll refer to it as that from now on. So World War II is what I'm most comfortable with. Now, I mentioned the phrase amateur historian earlier. I mean, I'm going to shy away from that. It's armchair historian at best. It's more or less a history enthusiast. That's what I'm going to refer to myself as now. I'm not going to sit here as if I'm speaking from any position of extreme knowledge or anything like that. But I do feel like I've got plenty of ideas that we can share together in a podcast format, and I think it leans to it. So that's what we're going to focus on. So with World War II, it's probably the main modelled period that I know of across the scales in 172nd, 148th, mainly for aircraft, also a little bit of armour falling in then. And we've also got 135th is predominantly for armour, and the amount of kits out there, it's predominantly the Second World War. That is changing. There's a good amount for the First World War. There's a very good amount for the Cold War going into the modern period. But I think we'd all agree that majority of the kits out there are servicing the Second World War. And that's it, probably for an important reason. It's a very extensive period. It's one of the most important wars in history. It changed global politics. All sorts of things happened all the way through it. It spanned the entire globe, whether it be on the Western Front, on the Eastern Front, in the Pacific, in North Africa. It was a vast period of history, and it's very interesting to model. So firstly, like I've said, I'm probably repeating myself, but I'm most comfortable with that period, and I'd like to think I'm decently informed when it comes to the Second World War. I've got a good grounding, plus quite a nice personal library of vehicles and aircraft. So just looking here, I've got books on, just glancing across, we've got the Panther tank, the Stuka, the Spitfire, the Hurricane, and then going on further, we've got books all across different aspects. I've got Armoured Attack, the Zaloga books following the US armour moving into Western Europe. You've got Jensen Doyle's DW to Tiger. There's all sorts of things there. There's quite a number of books there as well on actual aircraft. More importantly, there's a lot of memoirs and historical accounts of people who were in the war, whether it be soldiers, pilots, on the ground, civilians, all sorts of things. So there's a lot of areas where we can actually pull interesting information from the historical side of view. And I'm also looking next to me in my stack of kits is a Panther, a Spitfire, a KV-2, a BF-109, F-2, and a T-34-76 1940. So we're well on our way to be able to discuss models and history relating to the Second World War. We could probably spend 10 years just discussing the most popular vehicles, aircraft and naval subjects and still not run out. So that shows how vast it is, and that's without diving into campaigns, personal stories or even specific battles. So that's what focusing on the Second World War helps us. Wrapped up into it is the origins of the conflict, and they do come from the First World War. So it's an important aspect there as well to try, you know, sometimes tell that story and how that relates to modelling. There's also the Treaty of Versailles that comes out of that. There's the political collapse across Europe. So we'll touch on that in later episodes as well. And then for those of you who know me, there is the Spanish Civil War, which I think is a precursor to the Second World War, and it's a key period that is underrepresented and discussed, I believe, in mainstream media, in history, and in modelling, because there's a lot of kits that already exist that only need Spanish markings put on them, and they're ready to go. BF-109, T-26, BT-5, Panzer I, to name a few. There's also a lot of guns, a lot of trucks, a lot of things like that that were used. That's one point. There's already kits out there that aren't being marketed to it. It's an extremely important period of history, and it's often referred to as a proxy war between the fascist powers, Germany and Italy, and the Soviet-supported communists, where they're basically all there on the ground in Spain, but not by name. That alone is interesting, and beyond that, it was a testing ground. So there was tactics honed there, the German aircraft formations like the Rotten Schwarm that were used then in the Battle of Britain by the 109 pilots and going in with the bombers. These were born... Tactics were born in the Spanish skies. You've got Adolf Galland is flying all manner of planes over there. You've got Trautloft, to name but a few. I can go through name after name after name. There's a fantastic book, which is German Eagles in Spanish Skies, which has got account after account after account of these German pilots that you later hear about in the Second World War, honing their skills in the skies over Spain. So that's something we can look at. Aside from that, there's even the tanks as well. So the Panzer I is heavily used, the A and the B version, and they are found to be quite ineffective against other tanks. Is that the start of their fate being sealed in later years? Does that then kick off the development of different panzers and with guns and all of that sort of thing? So that's an area that we could discuss as well. And famously, it's where the 88mm gun that is well known as an anti-aircraft and anti-tank gun, which is often thought of a desert improvisation, was deployed against tanks in Spain. It's not something that Rommel did in Africa, or if he did, it had already been done. So the Germans knew it was an anti-aircraft gun. It was designed as that. The ammunition was available, and it was used and designed and honed and deployed in Spain. All of that leads this, I hope, to be quite an interesting podcast going forward. If that wasn't enough, we can talk about the post-war world, which was completely shaped by the end of the Second World War, namely by the atomic bomb, bringing in the atomic era, which starts the Cold War. You've got Potsdam, Yalta, the fracture between the Western Allies, the USSR, and then there's the dawn of the jet aircraft as well, and post-war tank design, with the IS-3 being shown off in September in 1945. You know, it does create quite a lot of options there. And all that feeds back into the Second World War. So these periods outside the First World War, the Spanish Civil War, interwar period, post-war, all of that is feeding back in to the Second World War. And just think about this. If you are in 1940, you're fighting in a Matilda 1. 5 years later, you're standing next to a Comet or a Pershing tank. That's quite the technological leap. And it's staggering, really, if you take a moment to think about it. And that's not even mentioning the arrival of jets like the ME-262, that's an operational jet fighter, and even the Meteor, which is flying in the UK during the Second World War. Further to that, the war also gives us some of the most incredible personal stories. Now, I have read these books, and these are the sort of books that we could go on to in later episodes to talk about. And I'd just like to pick on Blood Red Snow, which is a harrowing German account of basically retreating from Stalingrad. He's on the train carriage going into the tail end of the Battle of Stalingrad, somehow makes it out, and it's just a tale of limping back into Germany, really, and then the war ending around him. So there's some amazing first-hand accounts there. Another book that I think goes under the radar, I don't see it very often, I picked it up in a very small bookshop, is the War in a String Bag, which is about flying the Swordfish, which is one of the most underappreciated aircraft of the war, I think, personally. So we can delve on that a little bit more, where there's conversations of him bumping into his mate, Sailor Milan, who I personally didn't know who that was until I asked my friends, and then they said quite a famous Battle of Britain Spitfire pilot. So that led on to that, and now I'm building a model of Sailor Milan's Spitfire. And that's all just come from reading that book. So these stories are intense, and they're human, and there's a lot we can relate to. If you're not already sold on that, I'm going to go further. I've got a lot more on this. The cultural legacy. So TV series like Band of Brothers, The Pacific, or documentaries like The World at War, which is a key one for me, or even one of the BBC ones, which I've been watching recently, which is Nazis, A Warning from History. None of these make for easy watching necessarily, these documentaries. Certainly some episodes of The World at War and certainly Nazis, A Warning from History is not light, gentle watching, but it's important, I think, to find out what really was going on and understand that, which is also part of the hobby for me. Because if you're sticking a swastika on the tail of a 109, it's important to know what that stood for. It doesn't mean you have to think, oh my God, this is a Nazi war machine. But it would be naive to not think that, to not know that it was part of a greater picture. So I find that interesting myself. And there's certain aspects I'd like to touch on in my modelling going forward that I'm trying to think about how to do tastefully to try and tell some of these stories. And that's an important part as well, in my personal opinion. Films like Saving Private Ryan, Hacksaw Ridge, Midway, A Bridge Too Far, The Battle of Britain, all of these have got their part to play over the historically over why we're into modelling and where that sits nicely. And there's all aspects that just keep bringing us back to the Second World War being a very key period. And I mean, think about, it's summer at the minute in the UK as I record this, and Spitfires flying over dry farm fields in the height of summer is quite something, especially if you live in the UK. So the idea of that, especially with air shows, Spitfire flyovers, I think personally I've seen 5 this year, which is, that's a big number for me. I haven't seen quite that many in previous years. All of that just adds to the kind of emotional, nostalgic and interest aspect that ties us back to this period. And the modelling comes right with that. As soon as you see something that's of interest, I instantly think about the model. I think about, where's that variant? Where's the markings? Where was it placed? How can I get that? What's the best kit? And it drives us back into the modelling. And there is a model kit for nearly everything in the Second World War. I'm struggling to think of many things now that isn't available as a mainstream kit. Even as we speak, we've got Gecko models. Finally, someone has announced a mainstream plastic injection molded version of the Matilda 1, which is the best tank ever made. And I won't hear anything said about it, especially if you're from the UK. The Matilda 1 should be high up on your list. And also, just to round this off, I mean, it's worth just pointing out how complete World War II really was. It did touch every part of the world. So whether you're in a remote town in the US and your son is gone to the war in fighting a battle in Guadalcanal, or living in London and the Blitz lands right on top of you, or you're fighting in Pacific jungles, caught on the Eastern Front, everyone was really touched by it. Whether you were actually in conflict or not, there seemed to be not many areas you can be in that you weren't getting caught up by the Second World War. It's got myth, innovation, horror, heroism, and enormous stakes. We still debate the details, whether it's the truth behind what Blitzkrieg actually stands for, or the Sherman's reputation. Was it really nicknamed the Ronson? Or is that something that came in after the Second World War? And, you know, were the Germans really close to succeeding in the Battle of the Bulge? Spoiler alert, no, they weren't. But a lot of these things carry on into the narrative. And that's part of the interest that keeps us going. So all of that makes the Second World War an extremely rich and complex, timeless space to explore historically and, more importantly, through the hobby that we all share, which is scale modelling. So why scale modelling matters? Beyond it just being fun, this hobby does have a real value. So from the creative side, it's extremely creative, whether you take it really seriously and go into competitions, or you just build your models at your kitchen table and have fun and get it done in a weekend. However, whatever the hobby is for you, being creative is an extremely good thing for us, I believe, and it then leads on into helping us mentally as well. So unwinding from our very difficult day jobs, or if life is actually tricky in itself, it's a good bit of escapism. You don't have to add too much to it. You really can start with a model box from your local shop or your favorite online retailer. It arrives, you get it out, and you start. There's no messing around like there is with other hobbies that, you know, have quite a lot of, you have to buy quite a few things to get going. So it's very good from that point of view. And there's a lot of depth. You can go from just building models for yourself all the way up to going around global competitions all over the world. You can scale it up as much as you want or keep it really small and just for you. There's a wide online social aspect as well, with social media, with lots of Facebook groups. There's still some forums, there's plenty of websites to look at. There's the whole YouTube side of things as well, which is extremely good. There's pretty much everything you could ever possibly learn now has a YouTube video for free up there. You just watch it and you can pause it, go back. You can then even ask questions in the comments and often get answers from the creators themselves or other people who are watching. So there's a lot of help out there. Whereas when I was starting out, it really was just books and magazines and the odd forum. We've still got the books and magazines, but we've got all these added aspects too. So scale modelling matters in that instance. It's got a social aspect to it. The creative side, as we've been saying, is very good, and it hones skills. So there's a lot of transferable skills as well, either from jobs and skills that we already have or that we learn through modelling and we can use in other areas. Getting an eye for detail, knowing how to step back a little bit, sanding back, you know, knowing how to smooth down areas, sand down areas, how paint works, fillers, and all this, that, and everything else. You know, it's transferable. I know a lot more about how I could fill a crack in a wall from how I've had to get rid of seam lines in models. And if I hadn't done models, I wouldn't know about the fact that you don't just stick filler on, sand it back, and paint over, and it'll be fine, because you'll still see it. You have to blend it in. You need to then test it, go over with a little bit of paint, see, can you still see it? And all those sorts of things. There's a lot of uses that we can get from scale modelling, but the main thing is the creativity, good for mentally, and it's giving us a link to historical aspects as well. So we've discussed why it's going to be the Second World War, but just to delve a bit deeper into the actual history side of it and how modelling can give back a little bit and link you into the history. I mean, I probably wouldn't be half as interested in history as I am if I hadn't have started modelling. It's linked me in, even with other aspects of history that I like. So I know I'm focusing here on the Second World War, but just as I was growing up, I was very interested in the Napoleonic War and older wars as well. And that came from the Airfix figures that used to be around that I used to buy. We used to go out and I'd get a box of figures every time. So I'd have all the Napoleonic figures and all sorts of other figures that were around from different periods of history. So it links into that as well. But from the actual point of view of modelling, I mean, it brings to life subjects that is just in a unique way. The other aspect it gives you is delving deeper into a particular subject that you almost wouldn't get if you were just generally looking at history. If you were reading a book on, say, the Battle of Britain, you might not actually delve in to the specific marks of Spitfires used for it. You just might find that this squadron had so many Spitfires, this one had so many Hurricanes, and so on. But if you're going to go and build a Mark I Spitfire from the Battle of Britain, for instance, you start to delve into it. You start to look at which one. So, you know, a Battle of Britain Spitfire is very different from a Mark 22 Spitfire with a Griffin engine, Merlin engine. They're at two ends of spectrum. And I mean, if we take a 1940 Spitfire alone, in that period, roundels changed, underside shifted from black and white through to sky, and there was then sky blue, and then the sky sort of duckhead colour, oud and nil, all sorts of things going on just in camouflage colours. You also had the A and the B pattern, where the green and the brown would swap over. Antennas moved and changed, so you had pole antennas, you had hand crank undercarriage levers, and you also had automated ones in the cockpit. This is all changing at the same time. So you start to become an expert on specific variants of Spitfires just by choosing to build one from a period. And this is even then catered for in the kits. I've built the Tamiya 148th one, for instance, which has a lot of these things added into it, as well as the Edward one as well, which even goes down as far as having the two-blade prop and all of this sort of stuff, and non-blown canopy, the flat canopy. So you've got all of that added, and as you go through just building the model kit and selecting the one you want, the instructions usually take you through and show you that there were these differences on these aircraft. So it can give you that information as well, which is again quite difficult to find if you're just generally looking at history. So you can focus in on things, which is very useful for expanding your historical knowledge. And before you know it, when you're doing that, you're starting to think, okay, what month did this change come in? You know, in June 1940, in July 1940, in August 1940, what were the changes? And then you know, well, these had that, this had that, but then it was starting to come in with this. So you start to unpack a little picture there. And before you know it, you're researching RAF tactics, colour schemes. Then you start knowing about the squadron histories, the pilots, and that's all just come from opening a plastic kit and showing some interest in a model. And it's active learning. It's very tactile. It's hands-on. It's visual. Then you tend to remember it a lot more. For me, I find it a lot easier to learn that way than I do just reading a book. I can read pages and pages and think, that's not gone in. But if I'm building a model and I know that the antenna is like that because of a certain change that was happening at the time, because they were using this particular radio, I tend to retain that a lot more, and it's a lot more useful. Then just to go a bit deeper on some of the real world skills we can get from modelling, you're starting to build practical skills. So as I was saying, the painting, sanding and problem solving gives you a level of dexterity. And it also builds patience as well, which, you know, you really need for this hobby. If you haven't got patience, you're not going to get very far. But it can also teach patience as well, because there's a reason to be patient and you get something from it. If you actually put the time in, you are going to get a better result at the end. The more time and effort you put in, it is going to show on the finished model. And I have fixed household things with modeler's tools more times than I can count. I've got small screwdrivers and files and all sorts of things, little bits of little tiny tweezers, you know, sharp knives and things like that I can use, which means I become quite practical in fixing little things that tend to break around the house. It sharpens your focus, your hand-to-eye coordination. If nothing else, it can teach you perseverance. And then to round this section up, I'd just like to touch on the mental health aspect. I've mentioned this previously in a podcast where I did an interview a long time ago now. I did talk about how modelling has helped me with my mental health. Now, in the past, I did struggle. It's really from 2019 was the peak through until about the end of 2020. Funny enough, the lockdown and COVID situation that affected a lot of people fixed me, so that was what I needed. Who knew? I was finding that I was getting problems with anxiety, probably from stress and responsibility, a few things going on, running my own business and all of that, just building up. And I was getting quite uncomfortable having to sort of, it's a funny thing, having to sit still or things that you'd usually think would be enjoyable. So sitting around, having a meal with people and relaxing, those were the moments that I would find very tricky, kind of feeling like boxed in, I guess a little bit of claustrophobia coming out from it. It was a strange time, strange feeling, no idea where it came from, never had it before, was absolutely fine doing anything. You know, if we went to London, for instance, you know, we would go down to use the underground, the tube when it was very busy. I'd be the first one to push on to a full tube, wouldn't care, stood next to people, shoulder to shoulder, not a problem. Another example, if I had to go into a tall building and up a lift, I wouldn't think about it. I'd just get in, I wouldn't care if there was just me or 10 people in there. As soon as this aspect that I'm talking about, this anxiety, this kind of social anxiety thing that came in, those options were gone for me. I wouldn't even like walking up the stairs in a tall building. You know, I was looking to how to get outside. The only thing I was happy with was really being outside. So that came to me. I couldn't choose it. I just had it. What helped that was modelling, because it would focus me down from a number of reasons. One, it would give me something to focus on and think about. So whilst I'm at work or if I'm in a tricky situation or something, I've still got, what did that Panther tank actually look like, that one in that photo? What do you think the other side was? What would make a good kit? So I've got that in my mind all the time, thinking about the YouTube channel as well, what would make good videos, what would be a good plan, etc. So all of that's in the spectrum of modelling. I also had a couple of good friends in modelling as well, and we still have got a WhatsApp group, and I would, you know, just speaking to them, joking really about anything, taking the mickey out of each other and that sort of thing, would be a good bit of escapism as well. And I had that with other friends, but the link with modelling meant, you know, there was something you could nerd out about. You know, we would talk about, the joke was being waking up at 3 a.m. and two of us in the group being up at the same time talking about supercharger intakes on BF-109s, for instance. Now, that's not the sort of thing you can do with a mate who doesn't know about modelling. So all of that helped. Out of it, I actually, if you know the channel at all, around the same time, I started doing the Beginner's Guide to Armour Modelling. Now, I started that in, I believe, June 2020. And that was coming off the back of this feeling okay. Now, weirdly, I don't want to delve into COVID too much. It was a difficult time for a lot of people. But what that time gave me was a break from everything, because we were, you know, we had weddings going on and events and social events that we had to go to. And I probably had social anxiety, is probably what I was dealing with. The situation meant that none of that could happen. All I could do was go to work, and I work outside in my own business on my own generally. Certainly at that point, no one was able to come in. And that gave me time to unpack. What I needed was time for myself. Now, a lot of people, that can be the problem. But for me, that's what I needed. And so it was time at the bench. I had time to focus, could sort of rethink what I was going to do, started doing a good plan on the models that I was going to do. So I had something to build through. I was going to build a whole load of tanks, which I did, filmed them, put them up as a beginner's guide. And that really helped focus me down. And I came out of it. It just naturally stopped, you know, had spikes here and there. A few panic attacks would come in off the back of this as well occasionally. But that's all stopped. I'm happy to say I haven't really had an issue with that for a good few years now. But a lot of us do have these problems. We don't tend to talk about it. We probably don't need to talk about it. And it does seem to be especially men, but obviously not exclusively. There are ways around it without talking about it. Just being in groups, so socializing in something that connects us through modeling. So if you aren't lucky enough to have friends where you can actually be in sort of text chats, you can also be in social media groups on Facebook. You can be in forums, you know, follow YouTube channels. Maybe even start your own small community, start your own Facebook page, or try and join in with someone that you know that's doing that. Or join a local club if you're lucky enough to have one local. And this meeting up and talking about the hobby can help with these aspects that can affect a lot of us. There's something very soothing about sitting and just being at the bench with a kit and having a plan of what you're going to do. There's no outside noise, and you know, you just got your paint, you've got the plastic model, and then you can just progress through it. And you can add things in as well from that. You know, you could, these history audiobooks, YouTube channels, have stuff going on in the background, or just music, or just the window open and listen to the outside. You know, whatever it is you need, this can give you a good chance to get some mindfulness, center down and concentrate on yourself, and try and disconnect from whatever it is that's causing you issues. It tends to be in the outside world. It's not generally related to the hobby. So the hobby should be escapism, give you that chance for mindfulness. You can also build time around it. You know, it's a good way of giving yourself that hour. I'm just going to have an hour tonight at the bench. Breaks you away from being scrolling on the phone, all the other stressful things we got going on, anything that ties us in. You know, there's a lot of political stuff, and which is always being fed to us on our phones, in our feeds, with the way we scroll. It's a good way to step away from that as well. And modelling is not necessarily a passive escape. It's an active calm. You can actually do it with your hands. You can sit there and progress through something, and at the end of it, progress through a model kit, and at the end of it, you've got something for what you've done, and you can see that you've got somewhere, and then you can hone skills and go on like that through the model. I know many modelers who've said that it's helped them through illness or isolation, even grief or burnout in tough periods of life. You know, there are ways that this hobby can greatly help us, and it's worth thinking about that and using it if you are struggling with some of these points. And we don't talk about this side of the hobby enough. It is real. I don't think we all need to sit down and say how bad we feel all the time. Just being active in the community is a way of getting through this. So I just wanted to sort of share that little bit about me, because it might help some people in the same situation. We all go through it. It comes out of nowhere. There's no choice in it. It just happens. But this hobby is a very good way of getting through it if you are being affected. I mean, that leads us nicely on to the next bit, which is the community. That there is a massive community out there. If you don't know, there is definitely a huge amount of people doing this, and there's more than there's ever been. Just to name a few, there's YouTube channels where you've got hints, tips, build videos, you've got everything related to the hobby, but you've also got a number of channels that are community channels that are doing lives, they're sitting around, they're chatting. You can watch people actually sitting and chatting and building and be part of that by talking in the comments. And it's not unknown before too long that people who are really active in the comments get their own camera and they're doing it themselves, or even starting their own YouTube channel and being part of the YouTube community, which is a community in itself. We're not all here with our 100,000 subscriber plaques saying about how fantastic it is that we just build a model every month and it's totally pristine. There's so many different aspects to YouTube that, from the modelling point of view, that it's not just about build videos. From that, usually there's Discord servers as well connected to some of these YouTube channels or parts of the Patreon. And then in there, that creates their own private little network. You've got still got the sort of older formats like Flory models or Genesis models, which are their own closed group, and they've got a forum behind them which is behind a paywall to make it into a community. So that aspect as well, I was a member of Flory models for a long time and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was nice being in a small little community that wasn't getting caught up in the other public forums that you'd get the problems of people coming in and maybe trolling you. You don't get that behind these paywalls. That's what you're paying for, to be part of a community. So there's a lot of those aspects as well. With that, there's Facebook groups where you you certainly can get a lot of trolling on Facebook groups, but admins and that are usually pretty good at sorting those things out. So there's plenty of Facebook groups. So I run a Facebook group called the Spanish Civil War Modelling Group. And I can just tell you from running it, from experience, it's pretty good. We get we don't get many problems in there. We run a tight ship. If we do come in and you cause problems, we do get a lot of spammers. You've got to watch out for that. People who are either bots or just there to sell you a T-shirt with a 109 on it or something. It's just all scams. So as long as you keep on top of that, pretty much everything else, it runs itself with a couple of good moderators. It's a nice community, but it's about Spanish Civil War modelling. There's also Patreon as well. So a lot of these people who run these YouTube channels or websites, for instance, I mean, where I was saying with Flory as well, I mean, they're on Patreon as well. You can join it that way. And that creates its own community as well. So there's something for everyone. If you're happy to pay, there are paywall communities where you can actually guarantee you're not going to fall out with people. If you want to go the other way, there's plenty of Facebook groups, there's YouTube, so lots of ways to get involved in the community. You know, there is a whole world of fellow modelers out there, and that's without the real world, that's social. In real world terms as well, there's model shows and there's IPMS groups and SIGs. This is particularly in the UK, but I know America and other places in countries in Europe as well have similar model clubs. So if you're lucky enough to be near one, go and check it out and see what it's like. Just go along and see if it's for you. And being able to actually discuss with people who know what it is to have a seam line come back after primer, or their wheels are not all touching the ground on their truck that they're building, it can be nice to actually share that with someone who knows what you're talking about, rather than someone in your family who's thinking, oh yeah. So that's a good reason to get involved with some like-minded people. It's a, you know, it's the shared language, and everyone knows about these small victories that we get and the in-jokes, oh, not another Spitfire, and things like that. It's what makes it more than just a sort of solitary hobby. And I guess that's one of the reasons I've started this podcast, as much as my channel as well. This is an extension to my YouTube channel, Champion Scale Modelling, which we're rebranding as CSM. So it's the same old thing, just easier to pronounce. It's to share those connections, and my link with this podcast is connecting history with the hobby and the kits and bringing it all together. And to round off this podcast, I actually thought we'd do something a little bit strange, a Q&A with no questions from listeners, questions from myself to myself, and I'll answer them. So a little bit of a, it's just a way of explaining a few more things without me having to talk around it. And with this in mind, please do get in touch once you've listened to a few of these podcasts. Let me know in the comments. They're going to be going up on YouTube, so there's comments there. You can also get in touch through the email, which will be in the description below of the podcast. And I'll do my best to answer any questions as we go along or add in any interesting stories or anecdotes that you put down. So just a few hypothetical questions that give me a chance to explain a little bit more about this podcast, what we're going to be doing going forward. So in this gives me a format to go through. So why start a podcast if you've already got a YouTube channel? For me, it's not really one instead of the other. They complement each other. I've got some plans going forward where this podcast is going to allow me to give extra depth to the videos on YouTube. Long term, I'd love to have these podcasts in a kind of live format filmed. I'm just not set up for that at the minute. So at the minute, they're audio only. But going forward, we should be able to open that up. And this will go hand in hand with videos as we go forward. And it gives me space and time to get a little bit deeper, get some long format content going as well, because I'd like these to run to around an hour, whereas videos tend to be more 10 to 20 minutes. And YouTube's great for tutorials, product reviews, and showcasing full build videos, but a podcast lets me reflect a little bit more on what I've been doing and explore the things I'm doing more personally in a more kind of conversational way. And I've wanted to do this for ages, really. I mean, I started listening to podcasts when I got my iPod Touch, which must have been early 2010, possibly, in the 2010s. And on there was a podcast button, and I started searching for podcasts there and listening to all sorts of different things. And I used to search for scale modeling podcasts, and I remember them never coming up. And then I stopped searching, and all of a sudden I thought about doing it a month or two later, and there was four or five there. And that was the On the Bench had come along, and they obviously started the idea of modeling podcasts. Before that, there weren't any. I used to have to settle for Games Workshop and miniature related podcasts. But this is still an idea I've had in my head, even though there's plenty of modeling podcasts out there now. And I'm hoping this is a little bit different. This is more of a kind of hybrid structure. It's also a solo podcast, bringing in the history and bringing in the reasons behind the modeling for me. That's what I'm hoping to do with this. So my next hypothetical question, what makes you choose a particular subject to build? I always find there's a spark, some sort of personal interest, usually, but beyond that, it can be practicality as well. So as I've said with the YouTube channel, I do tend to be led with what I think is going to make a good video. That doesn't mean only certain things can be built. You know, my channel is set up in a way where I can have anything put on there. I'm not restrictive. There's not a vision to the channel. I'm happy to put anything on there. But also, if I'm going to spend 6 months building a model, I'd like it to get more than 2,000 views, ideally. So that has to come into it as well. So I tend to start thinking these days, is there a good kit available? Is that kit fun to build? Am I going to need a ton of aftermarket parts with it? And will it work on camera for filming? So is it an engaging subject? Now, if we take something like their KV2, which is quite a ridiculous-looking, massive, iconic tank, only really used in a short period during Barbarossa, if the only kit was available was the old Zvezda kit, and it was a real pain to build, I'd probably think, well, you know, not at the minute. But now that Tamiya have one released, I start to think, right, okay, so now the build's not going to be an issue. A lot of the stuff's already in the box. I probably don't need tracks. I probably don't need a metal barrel. All of a sudden, it's becoming much more of a possibility. Whereas before, it might have been there's so much work going into it. I think, okay, well, we'll leave that until I really want to build one of those. So there's a lot of aspects coming in, but I am conscious not to make just building Tamiya kits as well. I don't shy away from deeper, more difficult projects. If you look at the channel, I have built the Special Hobby Boomerang and done quite a large conversion on an Edward BF-109, converting it back to a Jumo-engined BF-109D from an E. So I can do big in-depth projects, and I will do going forward. But at the minute, the easeability of the build does factor in quite a lot at the minute as well. So next question here, sent in by Jason, is what builds have been the biggest impact on you? Well, for me, three stand out. Firstly, it's the SDKFZ9 FAMO, which is the German half-track, classic Tamiya kit. I remember seeing it in the Tamiya model magazine back in 2001. Still got that magazine. I was 14, and I asked for the kit for Christmas, and I got the FAMO and the trailer. I'd previously had a FAMO before that and not finished it. I had loads of photo etch sets that were used in the article, and I did get it built, but I didn't paint it very well. I was struggling with airbrushing at the time, and I think I brush painted it and it didn't look very good. So I have finished one FAMO. I've got more in my future. I've built three, finished one, got the trailer still in the box with all the extras from that Christmas when I was 14, which is staggering to think now, and I still love it, and I will return to it in the future. Second is the Tamiya Spitfire Mark I. And that's not necessarily so much about the model or the build or anything like that. It's what it did for my YouTube channel. So that is the video that helped put my YouTube channel on the map. It has got over 1 million views and it's still growing, which I never thought I'd ever get a video that would go to 1 million views. I find it quite surreal, especially because it was just a filler video whereas I was trying to get something else out and I hadn't finished it in time. I didn't really do anything with the special with the thumbnail. I kind of threw it together. It's the weirdest picture thumbnail title combination you're ever likely to get. For some reason, it just ran away with views and it still does till this day. So I'm very grateful for that. And third, bit of a cliche, but it is the Tiger One. Now, I've not really properly built a Tiger One completely to the end. I have in the past, but I haven't got one now that's of a level that I would be happy with. But I know a lot about it and I've had interest in it all my life, the vehicle. And I will get them built. And I am going to get one built and put on the channel at some point. But yep, for me, the Tiger One is, that's my tank of interest. I'll just go a bit deeper in this question with how long have I wanted to do this? Years, maybe a decade. I've been thinking about it. I never actually thought I'd get to a point where I could do it. I'm sat in an extremely quiet room. I've got the microphone. I've got a very good computer in front of me. I just didn't think this would ever get to this point, but we have. So now I've taken the opportunity to think, let's get on and do this. I've got time. I've got everything set up. So let's get on and do it. Podcasts have been a major part of my life for a long time. Like I said, when I got that iPod Touch, probably in 2010, since then, I was listening to podcasts as soon as I could get hold of them. I used to work as a gardener and I would have podcasts in my ears all day, whether it be Ricky Gervais or The Infinite Monkey Cage, which I still listen to now. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, they were the ones I started with. I've now transitioned to more kind of history hit. I do listen to a bit of Joe Rogan, all of that sort of thing. And obviously we have Ways, keeping all the World War II stuff going. And I obviously listen to modelling podcasts as well when there's a subject that captures my interest. And I said before, when On The Bench launched, I mean, it really was the start of something. I thought, oh, finally, now there's actually some guys talking about modelling. But in my head, I always wanted to do something a little bit different. Like I said, the hybrid, where modelling meets history, a little bit more rambling. I'm very happy with the idea of the solo podcast as well. I hope it resonates with you guys. Maybe we'll need to get a bit conversational later on, but I'm hoping this has a connection and listeners do come into this podcast and enjoy what I'm doing. So here we are. Let's see how we go. And then finally, what can listeners expect from future episodes? Well, hopefully fewer solo Q&As, unless you like them. But generally, it's going to be deep dives into specific kits, vehicles, and campaigns, and trying to tell the stories behind them. It's not going to be solely history. I've already got a few in mind going forward, a few episode ideas, and I've got some that are just modelling, some that are just history, and some that are a mix of the two. There'll be a mix of research, personal stories, my reflections on the hobby. We'll also get some of these books out as well and talk about some interesting things that I've come across and actually delve into the subjects a bit more. And eventually, some guests, I hope. I'm sure we can get round to that as well. So if you've got any ideas, questions, anything you'd love to hear covered, just let me know. Get in touch. There's the email address. There's the comments on YouTube. I'd really like this to be a two-way conversation. Hopefully, we can build something going forward. And with that said, there are a number of ways you can get involved with the podcast. So we do have a Patreon page, which is CSM page, same as the YouTube. So you can join in on Patreon if you want to do stuff that way. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is Champion Scale Modeling. Get involved with the various Facebook groups. So if you're interested in the Spanish Civil War, then search on Facebook for the Spanish Civil War Modeling Group. Tell your friends about this podcast. Share. Let's see if we can build the listening base and the viewer base. All that will help me greatly. So with all that said, that's it for this episode. If you have made it this far, thank you. So I do sincerely mean that, and I hope you'll stick along with this journey as we go on forward. And I do appreciate anyone taking the time to listen to this. Do let me know if you enjoy it. I hope you stick around as we go forward. In the next episode, we're going to delve into what makes a model subject a classic, why we get pulled to certain kits, certain subjects, what that means and how that links to the actual history of those subjects. So if that sounds like something you'll be interested in, make sure you subscribe, follow the podcast wherever you download your podcast from, or on YouTube. Get involved, and I'll be back with the next episode.